Welcome to another edition of Dutch by Association. I'm Wayne Barahona, and I'm actually recording this intro after the fact. We're joined today with our very special guest, Ty Rushing, who's been on the show before and is a good friend of ours, and he's a great journalist. But over the last several days, he has become the story with sharing his experiences on what it's like to be a black man in 2020. We started the show, we really just started talking. I didn't set anything up, I didn't actually do an intro, just because the conversation was so real, it was so natural, and I didn't want to interrupt the flow, even though, as you'll listen, several times I do, because I need to shut up. But I do want to warn listeners that there is going to be some language in this episode that is very tough to hear, and it's very real and it's very raw. So if you've got kids around, I think it's something, it's an important lesson, but we're going to leave that to you to teach. But I just want to give you a heads up that we're going to tackle some real stuff here. So I'm going to shut up now and get into the meat and potatoes. This is episode number 7 of Dutch by Association.
Way back in the early 20-teens, a city fella from Minnesota and a wannabe cowpuncher from small-town Iowa came together to swap tall tales over the airwaves. They made lots of friends along the way, but even more enemies. By chance, they made acquaintance with a sodbuster from over the other side of the county, who felt obliged to butt in on their little show and give them the what-fors from time to time. After nigh on a decade of pointless blathering, one thing led to another, and they were unceremoniously tossed out on their ear from their little radio show. Eventually, this ragtag group found their way back together and decided to start a little podcast we like to call Dutch by Association.
Yeah,
so you're famous.
And then you were just on what, Kelloland last night?
That was last night. And then a few weeks ago we had the KCAU one, and then I'm going to be on Kello again on Thursday, and then Saturday I did the Spencer Signal podcast. And then I was also in the Spencer's paper and the Dixon County paper.
Wow. But did they say where you worked when they put you in the paper?
Yeah.
Oh, really? They did. Oh, yeah, is there love between papers?
Do you not see us on Twitter?
No.
I have no idea who these people are.
He follows mostly people that have cows. That's a primary follow.
It's like Ag Twitter, Ty Rushing, Ag Twitter, fake Bob.
So what's weird is like I get a blend of all of that. Like I get some Ag Twitter too, because like, and I could tell from my sponsored ads, because it's like, oh, okay, all right, I'm in there. But yeah, I'm pretty cool with the guys at Dixon County, and so we always joke around and all that kind of stuff, and we joke that we're gonna have an Anchorman style fight.
Oh yeah, right,
yeah. Yep. But that's, yeah, you guys actually get together one night a year, one weekend a year, whatever, to
go nuts.
Yeah, and just, you're all buddies at that point. At radio, we don't have that.
No.
We never had that. We was just like, everyone, it was just like a rat fighting for a piece of cheese with a switchblade. Just stay away from me. We're never going to be friends.
No, I mean, don't get me wrong. Like, we definitely, because we're a lot of those guys, we're in the same division. So we're competing during the year, but we
and
still.
And your fight. But do you view it as a fight as a journalist? Like, for, because obviously you're going for awards and things like that, but you're not like a publisher. So you're not, I mean, obviously you're worried about ad sales because you want, to keep having a job, but that's not your primary motivator.
No. I'm all about stories. And then, of course, we get some overlap there too, like with the Ireton shooting.
Oh, sure. Yep.
So that guy was from Spirit Lake. So, like, I actually, like, Russ and I were kind of helping each other out on that. If one of us saw an update in the court files, we'd DM the other one, like, hey,
really?
This is happening right now. Yeah. And when he couldn't find the search warrant application, I shot it over to him.
That's interesting. Partnership. That's interesting.
Yeah.
After coming from radio, that's just such a foreign concept.
Even within the same radio station.
Yeah, even between employees.
Huh.
See, like for me, I think what happened is when I went to the Moores journalism training last year, you know, we met at all these different places around the state of Iowa. We talked to all these different newspaper companies, and everyone kind of shared their tips and tricks of what they're doing to stay alive and to be successful. And
yeah, I mean, it's a tough, it's a tough time.
And one of the people there pointed out, like, you know, I think it was from somebody from the Register, like, we're all newspapers, man. We're all in this together. And that kind of like really hit home with me, because I used to be very much like, if you're not with us, you're against us. Like, sure. I was very much like, you're not Iowa information, like, I'll cut you. Like, I was like that rat with the knife. And so, like, that kind of like really resonated with me. And so, like, I do try to help out other print, you know, publications and things like that, and work with them and, you know, kind of like pull our resources if we can on some stuff.
Again, we're joined by Ty Rushing here on the Dutch Bite Association podcast. And it's been, I don't know, roughly a couple of weeks since we've had been in the same company together, and the world changed. I never thought for a minute that we would be talking about something that would be a bigger headline than COVID. And suddenly, here we are. We are on the heels of the tragedy that happened in Minneapolis, and now we're trying to figure out how life exists, or how we just, the way we look at the landscape, because the landscape has changed. And a lot of what we wanted to talk to Ty about was the Twitter phenomenon, because without Twitter, and to take it a step further, social media, a lot of this stuff would have been kept in the dark.
So, Ty, you had the opportunity to go to a rally in Spencer.
Yes.
And you they asked for like people who were willing to speak, and that you took correct, that yeah. as an opportunity. And you went there and you spoke. Tell us a little bit about what that was like, and then what happened to because people started contacting you through Twitter at that point, right? And
well, let's back it up. How much advance notice did you have?
So the Sioux Falls protest was on Sunday, and that's what that's how I knew about the Spencer one, because the people who were putting the Spencer one together contacted the organizers of the Sioux Falls one on Facebook, on the event page, to ask for speakers. And so I saw that, and I just like threw my name in the ring, you know, my hat in the ring or whatever, and they were just like, all right, you're in. It wasn't like a vetting process or anything like that. It was
so
just like,
what do you have to provide here?
Yeah, I was like, oh, okay, because like, you know, these aren't professional organizers. These are folks who were just concerned community members who, you know, they felt like moved to action, and they wanted to do something about it. And so they were just like, we're looking for people. And I was like, I can do it. And they're just like, you're in. And I'm like, okay, I'm in.
And so, since then, you're like the most popular person I've met. Yeah, you've really blown up.
Yeah, it's been a little weird, because like, I've been hit up multiple times. I've been known Iowa Public Radio, KELOLAND, Indian Murph down in Des Moines, Sioux Falls radio station, and just like a few different things. And like, I'm gonna do Kello again in a couple of days.
So what are these organizations asking you?
Basically, a lot of them are just kind of asking me to speak on just my truth, and then, you know, racial injustice, having a conversation about race and being open about that kind of topic.
Mm-hmm. And so what we'll do right now is I want to play the speech, and we have it's the raw audio, of course. We're gonna play it now, and I'll tell our listeners it is. I mean, it's graphic. It's real.
Yeah.
And I just make sure that everyone understands that this is something that is going to be very raw, and we'll talk with Ty about it here right after this.
So my name is Ty Rushing. I'm the managing editor for Iowa Information, based out of Sheldon, and I am one of the few working Black journalists in Iowa. I'm originally from Kansas City, Kansas, and I came to Iowa for newspapers, and I've been here for 7 years now. And so, let me get started. I can't remember the first time I experienced racism. Sadly, in fact, I've experienced so many racist moments in my 33 years of living as a Black man that I've actually forgotten about some, including the time a group of young white men drove by my middle school football practice and called us a bunch of niggers. The only reason I remember that is because a friend of mine who also was on the team reminded me of it recently. I remember not being able to get multiple jobs, including one as a storeroom stocker in a department store, because I had braids. I also remember a city councilman complaining to my bosses that I wore stocking caps to meeting, even though I was dressed up, and despite it being in the middle of winter in Northwest Iowa. The cherry on top of that was another councilman who worked construction, came to meetings straight from job sites in dirty hoodies and jeans with messy hair, and not a peep was said about it. I'm a journalist by trade, which is how I came to be in Iowa. And I remember the first time I got an email calling me a nigger. December 31, 2017, in case you were wondering. While instances of casual and hardcore racism slipped through my mind, the moments when police officers have drawn weapons on me or pulled me over for frivolous reasons remain vivid. And this isn't an indictment on all cops, nor am I saying I haven't ever deserved to be pulled over, because Lord knows that would be a lie. The scariest incident for me occurred in 2008. I had those aforementioned braids, and my piece of junk car started acting up when I was in downtown Kansas City, Missouri, after dropping a friend off at the bus station. My tire ride was going bad, something I found out days later when it snapped in the middle of campus on my first day of class at UMKC. And I pulled over to check out what was wrong. I had my flashers on, and a KCPD officer pulled up behind me, and I tried to wave him off, thinking he was there to help. He got out of his car, reached for his service weapon, and ordered me to get back in my car and grab the usual stuff, ID, insurance, registration, the works. The entire time, I was on the phone with my late mother, and I kept the call going during the stop so she could hear everything that was happening. This was before Facebook Live, kids. As the officer checked all my information, which was legit, a second police car showed up. The officers then told me they wanted to search my car because I was in an area known for drug sales, and they suspected that I was a dealer, despite the fact that I was driving a hand-me-down 1998 purple Plymouth Breeze. I'm also bad at math and the metric system. They wanted to search my car because I watched too much TV and listened to too much Jay-Z, I told them they're going to need a warrant for that. They gave me two options: let them search the car, or they could bring a drug dog in. I chose the latter. I was handcuffed and sat on the sidewalk and watched as the officers, followed by a third officer with a drug dog, ransacked my car and tossed around my meager belongings, including my little, audio cassette adjuster because I had a tape deck. Using a flashlight, one of the officers walked over to me and started searching the adjacent sewer drain. After they found nothing, one of the officers told me, "I'm going to call you Houdini next time I see you because I don't know how you made those rocks disappear." I was a 21-year-old college student when this happened. Just about every black man has a story like this, or in the case of George Floyd, Alton Sterling, Philando Castile, Mike Brown, and countless more, it ends far worse than snarky remarks and store risks, which is why we are here today. The system needs to change. We need reform, we need accountability, and most of all, black and brown people need true allies to help to stop the racism, racial profiling, and police brutality. It's a tall order to fix all of that, and I don't know how we can. However, today, and the movements across the country leading up to this, those are a good start. Black people aren't asking for special treatment. On the contrary, we want the same thing we always wanted: true equality.
Yeah, Ty! Woo!
So, Ty, we can tell in that video that you've got, it looks like you have some notes jotted down, but we could definitely tell you were speaking from the heart. Tell us a little bit about those, the just where that came from.
Basically, it was just all my personal experience. I've seen a lot of stuff. I've been through a lot of stuff. I mean, like, dude, you know how bad it is? Like, when your boy sends you a random text message like, "Hey, remember that time we got called the N-word outside of football practice?" And you're like, "No, I don't remember that." And it's just like, dang, man, like, how much crap have I seen in my life and experience? And it's like, when something like that, where, an average person, that will probably scar them, that will probably be embedded within their person and who they are for the rest of their life. And I'm just like, dang, man, like, I forgot about that one, because it's just been so many different moments like that and so many just like little things that you're just like, wow, like, how, like, like, that's a blip on the radar for me in terms of like things that I've experienced in my life.
When you grew up, did your mom, your dad lay out for you and say, "Son, this is the type of thing you're going to experience," or was there preparation at all for you?
Oh, absolutely. Like, you can't raise a black child in this world and not give them the heads up on what they're going to be encountering and what they're going to be experiencing, because if you do that, you're setting them up for failure, man. Like, you can't have them thinking they're going to go out there and think it's going to be hunky-dory and okay, because it won't be. Like, people were just going to dislike you or treat you differently just because of how you look, whether you know it or not. Like, you're, even though you're innocent and you haven't done anything in this world, people are still going to act differently toward you and just like look at you differently and like put these stigmas on you just because of what you look like. And it's like wild. Like, somebody tweeted the other day, like, racism is crazy. It's like how you just look at the color of somebody's skin and be like, "Don't like them."
Right. Yeah.
Like, not for me.
So how did you adjust with the move to Iowa? I mean, obviously that's a completely different landscape, yeah. But biases still remain.
It was quite different, you know, because I went from, but I'm actually thankful that I went to Newton, Iowa. It's in central Iowa. It's like population of 15,000. And so it kind of reminded me a lot of KCK, just smaller, on a smaller scale.
Sure.
I mean, obviously it wasn't a lot of black people because we're still in Iowa, but, and it was 30 minutes from Des Moines, and that helped me a lot because, you know, when I first got there, I was like, okay, because like I need a barbershop that's going to be close. And that was Des Moines. And I just needed, sometimes like I still need those big city amenities, and it was good for me to have them close by as I adjusted and acclimated. I mean, and I was like, you know, I was a little bit like, I want the opportunity, but at the same time, I was terrified because I was like, I think I wrote in my first column, like, I had relatives telling me, like, hey, man, the Klan's going to be up there, so be careful. And what? Yeah, I mean, okay, what's the most well attended event in Shelton's history?
Yeah, it's a Klan rally.
Yep.
Well, hopefully Rise Fest has eclipsed that by now.
It is not yet, but really? I know Rob's working on that.
Oh my
God. Yeah, that would be okay.
We need that to happen. That's a record that needs to go away.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh my
goodness. So like they weren't that far off, but you know, a lot of people were incredibly welcoming to me. And it was a very interesting time. What was kind of funny is that like a lot of people who didn't like Obama thought I knew him personally. And so they would personally address their gripes to Obama to me. Like I'll just be walking down the street, somebody be like, hey, Obama's messing up. And I'll just like,
next time okay. You hang out,
yeah. I'm like, you know, next time with the black people meeting, I'll be like, Barry, bro, old boy's not happy with you.
So a big thing happened this weekend. I saw it all over Twitter. We talked about Twitter, also Facebook. Your newspaper that you work for, what they published their weekly on Saturday, had a special page printed. You want to talk about that a little
bit? Yeah, absolutely. So we did two front pages. The first one was like a normal front page. We had the top of the full story, and the mask was actually pulled down a little bit for that one, just to show some of the protesters. But it was a story on the Black Lives Matter march in Spencer. Then, of course, you know, Fincher King was the main package, and a story about the new sheriff races. We had two contested ones in our region, including one in Lyon County that was really heavy. And then it was a story about the casinos reopening. And the second front page was an all black page with the masthead, and it said Black Lives Matter. And then, and then it says, yes, all lives matter, but the black community needs us now.
So I want to ask you about that line that was added at the bottom. Well, first I want to say this. I think that response was very, very powerful because in this area, a lot of people's response is, all lives matter. Yep. All lives matter. And I think putting that down there, in my opinion, was huge.
No, and that was the idea of our president, Jeff Wagner, because there was a lot of like, it was a lot of debate in the office, like trying to figure out like, what can we do on that? Because, you know, obviously, even though it shouldn't be controversial, somehow to be controversial if we just said Black Lives Matter in Northwest Iowa, like,
right.
Which is stupid, but whatever. So I'm glad we came up with that line, because that line I thought was like incredibly impactful, because, you know, it shows like, hey, okay, we know this is going to be your first counter argument, and we're saying, yes, this is true, like all lives matter, no one is denying this, but we're saying that the black community needs us now. Which I, you know, like I cried when I saw that page, like when they told me about the idea, I cried like a baby in the middle of the office. And because, like, especially because, you know, it was the day after the Spencer event. And so, like, you know, after pouring my heart and soul out there on stage in front of, you know, a couple hundred people, and then coming in the office, and then, you know, my design team and my bosses surprised me with that, you know, because, like, I'm sure a lot of people are going to be like, oh, it was the black guy's idea, but it actually wasn't.
Well, and I was going to ask you about that. That's got to be, and you had posted a tweet to this point, too, that. The environment in which you work, you had your boss who was recovering from heart surgery.
Yep.
Who was just making sure that you were all right.
Yeah, Peter Wagner, man. He's 80 years old, just had heart surgery. He actually wrote a column about it in that same issue of the paper. And he calls me, you know, he's like coughing a little bit and all that kind of stuff. And he's like, hey, I just wanted to check on you, see how you're doing with all of this going on. And it's just like, damn, dude. Like, that's like, when I tell people it's such a difference working at a family-owned company versus a corporation, it truly, truly is. And like, that's why, like, people are like, why'd you come back to Sheldon, Iowa? Why are you still in Sheldon, Iowa? Why are you still at Iowa Information? And I'm like, this stuff right here, like, I've been in those corporate environments, I've been in those corporate newsrooms, I've been in places where you're just a name in a spreadsheet, and you're not that at Iowa Information.
And how many of your friends, your brothers, have you seen get furloughed during the biggest story of probably our generation.
And just a ridiculous amount of journalists have been put on the sidelines during this. And it's wild. Like you said, the biggest story in the generation. And you got some of the best, most well-sourced, most well-connected journalists in Iowa and across the nation just been put on the sidelines, and they can't do anything about that. They got stories they want to follow up on, and they can't. They got sources calling them, and there's nothing they can do about it because they don't have an outlet to publish it on unless they want to work for free. And nobody wants to work for free.
Sure.
And so it sucks to see that, man. I mean, because like it's impacted us as well. Like, we haven't had to furlough anybody, but once our PPP runs out, man, things are going to get a little tighter, and we're, you know, that's a big concern in the office right now.
Well, and I'd say credit to all of you there in the Wagner family, especially, you know, taking what shouldn't be a controversial stand, but what could be, and could maybe lose some subscribers over that potentially. I hope not. I hope we don't have that many people that would be upset about caring about Black lives, but you know, taking that risk that they could lose some revenue at a time where they need it most, I think that says a lot about their integrity and their support for you and everybody in the Black community.
No, absolutely. I mean, because like I said, like, it wasn't my idea. It was that was all the other guys, and you know, but I'm kind of like the spokesperson for the company, like, because like even before this, like, I would always do interviews on our behalf for like different outlets and things like that.
Yeah, you're managing editor. You're the face and the pen.
Yeah, because like our the editor in chief, he's not a public speaker. He's right. Like the guy, you know, like he's the guy in the chair. Like, he's the guy to get stuff done and behind the scenes and all that kind of thing. Where it's like, I get stuff done as well. Don't get me wrong, but like, I'm definitely more comfortable with being out there than in the spotlight, and he is not. So it works out nicely because we get to balance each other out in that way. But it was just super cool to see like everyone have your back like that. And I think that's like why it was so emotional for me too, because I would have never expected to see that in the Northwest Iowa Review. And like, you guys saw the comments, a lot of people said the same exact thing, and it was beautiful. It was wonderful. I mean, we went harder in the Northwest Iowa Review than a lot of papers did nationally. If you look at some of those front pages, went harder in the Northwest Iowa Review than a lot of these other papers. And that's just like, that's wild to see. I mean, you had people being like, you know, jaws dropped. I mean, you had other professional, like, well-known newspaper designers commenting on that. And so, like, I made sure to send those to our head designer, Bree, you know.
Yep, I know. Yep.
And she was, like, very tickled because Bree went hard. That was her design. And it was her, and you know, it was her and the graphic department's idea. And Bree went in on that, man. She fought for that hard. And that was awesome.
I do have to ask, I wonder how much ink they spent. So much black ink.
You know, I was going to bring that up. The Dutch side of me thought, man, that page that's, right there,
that's how you know a lot of money. But the ink's still wet on that. But that's, yeah, I mean, that shows just how much they care and what a statement. What a great statement to make and to really open some eyes. And it was very touching during your remarks during the Spencer rally that that you've had to deal with that stuff head on, with racism head on here. I mean, like, it sounds bad for me to say, but I don't care if it happens in other towns. But in my town, no, that's... That I mean, but you talked about the first time you got a racial epithet in email.
Yeah, December 31, 2017. And it was just kind of like, I was like, dang, it was like early in the morning too. I was like, no, this dude just woke up angry. He was like, who wakes up and is like, you know what? Time to be racist.
Was that while you were here?
That was at the Sioux City Journal.
Sioux City Journal.
That was at the Sioux City Journal. And we were just like, I mean, my friends and I were like kind of talking about, we were like, dude, just like opened up his paper and was like, and just angry. He was like, I'm going to send this guy a note right now. And like, I can't even remember what the story is about. It was like, I think it was like the top five business stories of the year or something like that. It was like, so I was just like, really?
Oh, like, it was a year-end recap story.
Yeah, like, this is the story? Like, this is the one? And the thing about it is like, I've been expecting that email since I moved to Iowa and became a journalist. Like, I've been expecting that. Like, I knew it was gonna happen. I didn't know when. And so, like, it was kind of like, for me, it was almost kind of amazing that it took that long.
Well, okay, so to that point, do you think that is that a commentary about Iowa, or at least about the places that you've been here in Iowa and the people that you've interacted with locally? That, are they more understanding? Are they more quiet? Is that
it's kind of a mixed bag, because because, like, yeah, like most of the complaints I get is like, I would not view them as like race complaints. I'd be like, view them as like they're complaining about the reporting or something like that, or something like, you know, like some of them have substance and other ones are just like, you're dumb.
Right.
But like, I don't feel that many of the complaints that I get are racially motivated. Like Peter Wagner thought one was, and he got mad and like wrote a whole column about it because a guy wrote me an anonymous letter after I covered a former Muslim who is now like a hardcore right wing Christian who said he gave a big old speech about how evil Islam is and all this kind of stuff. I covered it like in the Orange City Iowa State Bank basement. And so when I wrote the story, I reached out to an actual Muslim to get, you know, the counterpoints to all of his arguments. And some guy from Osceola County wrote me an anonymous letter, you know, going down and accusing me and Obama of being Muslims and me being all that kind of stuff. And
so you think this might be the same guy that put together your Twitter greatest hits?
Oh, no. This is a different guy. No. That guy's a little bit more well-spoken, even though he's crazy. But... And so this guy, yeah, he did all of that. And like Peter was like, I think he said you're Muslim because you're black. I'm like, Peter, I don't think he knows I'm black because this is before we started putting stories on the website. So like, sure. It was just my name. And I'm like, I don't think he knows that I'm black, Peter. Peter was just like, he wasn't having it. And so he wanted to write a column about it, and he did. And then the guy actually sent a follow up letter the next week where he's like, oh, I didn't realize you were black. No, I didn't.
Really?
Yeah. And I was like, see, I told you, Peter. But like, yeah, he apologized. He's like, but still, I don't think you should have like countered all the guy's points and all that kind of thing, blah 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 blah. And I was like, well, see, I told you it wasn't because I was black. It was just because he didn't think I should have like talked to an actual Muslim for a story about his entire faith.
Well, that's the problem though with anonymous letters. People assume that you're hiding your identity because of, you know, you're being offensive for some reason, right? So I can see why he jumped to that conclusion.
Yeah, but, yeah, and absolutely. And the thing is, like, I follow my editor-in-chief's lead. If you write it anonymously, we don't got time for it. Yeah, it's like,
absolutely.
All right, if you
don't have the stones behind it to sign your name, then yeah, you're not going to give it the time of day.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. What's the point? Like, why waste your energy on that? Why get mad about something like that you couldn't even sign your name to? Where it's like, now you sign your name to it, I'll call you up and so we can talk about it or discuss it, because I'm like, oh, dang, okay. Like, let's have a conversation about this. Because, like, it's the same way when you get, like, somebody who makes a burner email account to send you a nasty letter.
Yeah.
You just, like, ignore it.
dummy_dumbass@gmail.com.
Yeah, man. Yeah. Well, not
a lot of more Hotmail.
Yeah.
Yep. Good point.
Or AOL.
Oh, yeah. Man. Yeah, I know. It's always weird. And you get those spammer emails from like AOL, and they're like, hey, let us help you improve your SEO. It's like,
Do you own a mirror? Maybe you should look in one.
Man, like, I don't think so, buddy. Good try, though.
Let's take a brief timeout. We need to rehydrate, and we'll be back with segment number two after this. All right, welcome back. Segment number two of the Dutch by Association podcast. We turned the air conditioning on, so now we're probably not going to get so ornery, but yeah, you can hear it a little bit, can't you? That's fine.
And that's okay.
That's all right.
It's the price we pay.
I can't smell us anymore, so that helps.
There's enough air movement.
That's right.
Thankfully.
So the original, we tried to get you on the podcast here even before the whole this whole deal went down. We really wanted to talk to you about Twitter.
Yeah, my favorite platform.
Because Twitter is for those of you that don't know. Oh, by the way, I was going to bring up my mother. So I was going to bring up my mom. She texted me, I don't know, I think it was last week or 2 weeks ago, and I was questioning whether I wanted to say something or not, but I'll just say it. She said to me, who's that Mitch guy? He sounds actually pretty smart.
Like, oh, man. I've managed to fool at least one person.
What the hell does that say about us? Thank you very much.
That's got to make you feel good.
Yeah, you got to keep the right company if you want to sound intelligent.
Apparently. So, yeah. But Twitter was something that I bet I've had a Twitter account for 10 years. And I bet in the last 8 years, I checked it maybe once a year. And just for the life of me, I could not see what the deal was. I guess, there's not as many recipes there, and there's not enough games being played. I don't. It was tough for me to grasp.
Oh, I had a misconception of Twitter, too, because I...
you know, I obviously started with Facebook, and you remember when everybody's status updates were what they had for lunch and whatever. Mm-hmm. And so my initial thought about Twitter was that is the worst part of Facebook, and that's it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's just like a complete vanity thing. And it's actually the opposite. You know, I really discovered it is all the best parts of Facebook, which you rarely see anything decent on Facebook.
And with what happened in Minneapolis and then the days after, I think it really underscores how important of a tool not only social media is, but Twitter is. So, Ty, you've talked about how you grew up in Kansas City. That obviously, as most people know, it's the major metropolitan areas usually embrace the newer technologies first.
Right.
So, did you just start with Twitter and then do like the other stuff, just dabble in the other stuff, or how did that work?
Like, what do you mean you start with?
Like, did you do Facebook, and did you start with Facebook, and that was your gateway drug to Twitter?
Oh, nah, dude, come on, man. I'm OG. I'm 33. Like,
were you MySpace?
Oh, God, dude. I can't. Man, this is a family radio podcast, so I can't say, like, how great MySpace was for me, but I was in that 18 to 22 range when MySpace was popping, and I knew how to do HTML, so.
Okay. Yep.
Yep. Life, no life was good.
Say no
life
more.
Life was good. Yeah. That's all I'm gonna say about that. Life was really, really good.
Yeah. Good for Ty and good for Tom.
Yeah, MySpace was good, man. I had, and then for Black people, Black Planet was an early social media site, and so I had one of those. But it was hard to get a picture on there unless you had a scanner in those days, because you know we didn't have camera phones.
Yeah.
And so like I had like a long distance girlfriend in Texas on Black Planet that you know we talked to, message, all that kind of stuff. But like I said, you couldn't really send a picture or anything like that because we didn't have the technology.
All right, so let's take it one step further backwards, and let's go to something that is near and dear to Aaron's heart. Aaron's probably you are the oldest one here.
Yeah.
He met his wife on MSN Messenger.
Yeah. Oh, snap.
That's how it all began.
Respect.
And that was my second generation. The first generation was ICQ.
I was about to bring that up.
Yeah, ICQ was first generation, then MSN Messenger. Yeah, that's how I met my wife. I had to wait for her for like 9 months to stop dating this idiot.
Holy cow. So, dang, dude, you were patient.
That doesn't mean I didn't date other girls in the meantime.
Oh, okay. So you were just like sitting
there
twiddling
your thumbs.
It doesn't necessarily mean that, but yes, it does mean that.
It wasn't for a lack of trying that he waited. Let's just say that.
Yeah. So then when did you pick up Twitter?
I don't know. It's on my profile. What is it, like 2009 or 10? And I didn't want to do Twitter at first. Like, I was doing a radio show with some buddies across the country, and they, like, a digital, like, it was like Blog Talk Radio. Like, I wish we had kept at it, because it was, like, before podcasting became really popular, and, like, we could have been rich by now, whatever. And so they were like, hey, man, you got to get a Twitter to promote the show. I was like, it's stupid. I don't want a Twitter. It's stupid. I still got MySpace and Facebook. And then, of course, now you look at me on Twitter. And so, like, yeah, I got it. And then, you know, eventually, like, I started using it more, like, because, like you guys pointed out before, like, I use it as a good balance between personal and professional. And so, like, once I got my first job, it was like, oh, man, I can, like, live tweet these meetings from here and that kind of thing. And so it's been an incredibly valuable tool for journalism. And, like, it's great for crowdsourcing, too. Like, because I can just, like, hey, man, I need some information on this, or I need some help with this or that. And, like, people were so willing to help. And then I think, like, because I actually had the guys at the Spencer podcast, Spencer Signal, ask me, too, like, how do you get so many Twitter followers? I'm like, I don't know. I just tweet stuff and people respond.
Well, and I think that's a lot of it is you have content. You need to generate content for people to want to see the content that you have. And that's the biggest part of Twitter. And I think that's the distinction from Facebook, whereas Facebook, if you have a profile, people can be like, oh, yeah, I remember that guy from high school. And you can, like, scroll through their photos and say, oh, yeah, no, look at you. Yeah, Jim, you're doing great. Whereas Twitter is the memory on Twitter is so small. So it's just like, what have you done for me instantly? Because that timeline refreshes so quickly.
By the way.
And the fact that that was the biggest thing for me is that, and I still don't do it well. Like, I tweet once a week-ish, But I'm on there. Like, I literally have this screen here. You, now that you can see it, the listeners. But I've got three screens here in front of me, and one of them is always on Twitter. And it is always, it's constantly refreshing because I have never been so tuned in as I have been since I've been doing that with Twitter. I mean,
like 3 months ago. I mean, you haven't been tuned into Twitter for very long.
No, you're right. No, you're absolutely right. Because, you know, it used to be like, oh, I would wait for, is there going to be a killer Facebook status that comes out that tells me what's going on here in the world today, you know? Or you would, like if you're waiting for the greatest sports take, so you just go to ESPN.com and just hit refresh and refresh and refresh and...
See, I warned you guys.
Oh, my gosh.
It's not me.
It's Mitch.
No, it's not Mitch. Oh, it's Wayne. It's Wayne. It's my phone is on silent. It's actually my computer in the background.
Just talking about how hip he is and in tune with Twitter, and then makes the most boomer move of all time, leaving the ringer on in a business meeting.
No, my ringer's off. But
what you should have done was answered it and been like, "Hey, I'm trying to record a podcast." That would have been the ultimate old guy move.
No, I would have been like, "Oh, okay, but can I help you first? I guess. I mean, really, if." I have a minute, I guess, but Twitter is really just, I guess, the instantaneous, there's no bias, there's no...
It's raw.
That's the greatest way to
you're
put
getting,
it.
Like, you're getting everything raw, man. Like Tyler Davis with the Des Moines Register, a buddy of mine, they sent him up to Minneapolis to cover the protest for USA Today, because, you know, that's who owns the Register. And, like, I was just watching him. I was glued to his feed because he was getting everything raw up there. And then you sent me a good follow, too, for that. Mm-hmm. And it was just like, you're seeing this stuff raw, man. Like, you don't have to interpret anything, man. You just get to watch it and see.
Right. And then you can develop your own conclusions from that.
Yeah. And that was just like, it was powerful, dude. And it's like, I know for a lot of journalists, like Ferguson was kind of that turning point in 2014, like where a lot of them started just posting those narratives like raw in that raw digital format like that. And, you know, people took to it. And so, like, we're still seeing that in effect today. And you've seen a lot of journalists utilize that. And, like, that's why I love, like, live tweeting different events, man. Cause, like, boom, people can see what's happening right then and there. And it's like, I can't write a story that's going to include everything that's also going to be interesting to read and, you know, get to the meat of the issue. Whereas, like, if I live tweet something, like, you can catch this part, this part, this part. And then, like, I can really refine it for the story, you know, follow up to make sure I get the information correct. You know, maybe go take a photo or something like that to go along with it that wasn't just a meeting photo. Like, you know, so, like, I see it as that way. I see it as, like, a partner to my additional reporting. Like, even an older guy got it when I was explaining it to him when I was live tweeting in Feenstra when he was at Pizza Ranch in like February, I believe. He was just like, because he saw me, like, I had my phone out recording, I was taking notes, I was shooting photos with the camera, and then I was still tweeting stuff, and he's just like, "Oh wow, you're a busy little guy." I'm like, "Yeah, yeah." I was like, "I am." And he's like, you know, and then I explained Twitter to him. He's like, "Oh, so it's kind of like a bonus for your readers." I'm like, "Yes." Yeah. Well, absolutely. That was,
like,
hit
the,
it.
By the way, that was the greatest, like, a middle 60s farmer impression I've ever heard.
Bro, I love old farmers, man. They're the best.
You're a busy little guy, aren't you?
Dude, I love talking to old farmers and vets, man, because they just give it to you straight. And it's like, it's always amusing.
So with Twitter, especially from a journalism standpoint, how can you, give away the farm for free and still get paid?
Well, the thing I've noticed is that like a lot of like Sheldon City Council, for example, people still read the hell out of those stories, even though I post them like online, like the full story a week later, and I make sure they come in print first, and people still read them. People still go to them. I mean, the chicken situation a few weeks ago, you know, like, and even with the live tweets, like, you know, you're getting the play by play, the blow by blow. Whereas, like, the story is like, okay, here's the more comprehensive version of that.
Sure, you get the backstory, you get the
right,
details.
Like, I can't, yeah, with 240 characters, I just can't, like, explain every issue the way it truly needs to be explained, especially for the more complicated matters, like the franchise situation. Good Lord, that was hard to live tweet. Sure. Or, like, even our
mayor. It was hard to be on the council for. just throwing that out.
Okay, it's a tax. Or, like, even last year, just last year in general was, like, crazy, ridiculous, amazing for Sheldon City Council. Think about it. We had three mayors, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good point.
We had three mayors. We had a dude holding up the wall of a giant building with plywood and sand. Like, 2019 was wild, and, like, I'm so mad at myself for not submitting some of those council stories to awards. And like when I've had veteran journalists call me out on that, who've like, you know, follow me on Twitter that I know, like Nick Hitrick, like a dynamite course reporter down at the Sioux City Journal.
Sioux City Journal, sure.
Yeah, he was like, dude, you didn't submit that stuff? And I was just like,
hello, it's just another day in the hood, right?
I know, and it's like, I kind of took it for granted because it was like such a ridiculous year for Sheldon politics.
For a long time, it was just, it was like everyday business.
Yeah. And,
it basically came down to a couple of very loud voices that were trying to stir things up. And it made me, just to give context to what Ty is talking about, I don't even know when it started, but Trish took the job.
February 2019.
That's why we have a journalist here.
Yeah, Brittany resigned on January 9th, 2019, I believe.
Yeah, it was right in there.
That's the only reason I remember because that's my birthday.
Trish gets the job. Trisha Maindering, who, of course, was the mayor.
For a long time.
Yep. And she takes a job, and that leaves the opening for the mayoral position. Mayor Pro Tem Brad Hint takes it over in the interim. Then there's a open mayoral race. Myself and Greg Giels. And I guess there were others.
Yeah, yep. Two more. We got Fred Grom. Wow. Yeah, my buddy Bob Engel and Fred Grine also were participants in that.
Yes, and I don't mean to diminish their participation in this. I just know that it came down at the end to myself and to Greg Giels. Greg Giels won. Yeah.
Two votes, though.
Yeah, and I did. It did take two votes to figure it out, and then I was asked to consider the open city council role that Greg's departure to the mayoral position opened up, and then we took that. But I took that. We, meaning we. Yeah,
my team and I.
The royal we. Well, my advisors and us.
The WB think tank. took that position, and then it was basically, I remember I took the position, and the first meeting I went to was on the benefits for the city of Sheldon. So I'm in a room with Tom Foose of Perspective Insurance and then Sam Koiker, and I'm still trying to figure out, like, what am I going to do here? And he's like, well, here's how the things have run the last 5 years, and you can decide whether this was good, bad, or otherwise. And I go, holy crap, that was allowed to happen for the last 5 years. Okay. So then it would spiral from that to the franchise agreement.
Whew.
I remember driving home from those city council meetings. I would have my fingers on the steering wheel. Like, my knuckles were turning white because I was just so angry. Like, I was just there. So this is the thing that I have about people that really like to hear themselves talk, because I'm one of those guys, but the only exception that I will have is I'm also, for as much as I'm willing to talk, I am willing to listen. But I'm only willing to listen as long as someone is willing to listen to me. And when that is turned to a one-way street, then I get very, the blinders go up, the earmuffs go on, and I move on. And you brought up franchise fee. Boy, you just... sorry.
That's your trigger word right there.
God, it really is, because I was just like, if every meeting is like this, I'm out. I'm gone. Forget this. This is dumb. Because if we can't behave like adults, why do we even have a council?
Yeah, no, 2019 was an intense year. And, like, I gave, two of my predecessors both crap about that. I'm like, okay, you guys got the same mayor, same police chief, same city manager, right. Pretty much same council all that time. And then, like, I went through all these changes. They even had the same fire chief.
Right,
it's been so much turnover since I came here. And, like, Councilman Sean Brewster actually brought that up to me. He's like, you know, you should do a story just about, like, how many positions have changed since you came here.
That
and
is
I was
a
like,
great point.
And I was like,
actually would be a pretty good story just because it's changed so much and so drastically, like, in all these, like, top-level positions. I mean, I think it was last year we had a new superintendent, like, at the beginning of the year, new city manager, you know, ended up with a new mayor, and just, like, you know, these are all kind of, like, key positions here in Sheldon, and they were all new faces.
Don't typically have that level of turnover.
No. It's like all the predecessors have been there for, like, you know, with the exception of the one guy between Scott and Sam, had been there for, like, decades. You know, like, or at least, I mean, not decades, but, like, more than a decade.
Sure, yeah.
And then it's just, like, all of a sudden, boom, 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 new change.
But I do honestly feel that that's a good thing. I think you need to keep moving forward. That's the thing about representative government, is that you need to have... I 100% am in favor of and will advocate for term limits. I don't think... I doubt I would do another term after this. I really don't. I mean, I won't leave the city in... like, if there's no one left to run and everyone's just like, okay, well, yeah, you know, whatever. I won't. I'll do what I can. Sorry, my Hispanic talk with my hands thing started coming out, and Aaron's 17 beers over here apparently created
a little. Well, I did save my yard sign from your last campaign. It's still up in my garage, so just nice. In case.
Yeah, you have fun yard signs. Like, it was so good, I had to do a sidebar on them.
Yeah, I appreciated that. Yeah, yeah, that was the yard signs were. It was an afterthought because I was just thought, okay. So we had to stop tape because there was a radio report of some things going on that blew up my pager, my radio here. Actually, Aaron, I'll probably have you take your headphones off because your cord will not reach, and then just. The knob on the left, turn it all the way to the off position. Thank you. All right, good job. Work. And so we can get back to it. You were telling Ty about how we're lucky, quote unquote. We have the.
I would say we're lucky.
We have the convenience of being able to do this on a recorded basis, and how well. Yeah, you said the last. Last episode we did, I was able to get the recording finished.
Yeah, like, because
I had it posted that night.
Yep. Little to no deleting. This show, a little more deleting.
Oh, my God. This show is going to be this is going to be fun. Well,
I had the wife get the grill out because, you know, we're going to put steaks in the grill tonight.
And now not in the crock pot.
Not the crock pot.
With it raining, maybe we'll have to put them in the crock
pot. No, don't.
No, I only did it that one time.
Don't ever do that.
Ever again.
Ever. I had no idea you'd take that so personal.
Who doesn't take it personally?
Dude!
Who doesn't take that personally, man?
Come on. But on Twitter, you really... That hurt a little bit.
It should have hurt. I hope it did hurt. Because if it didn't hurt, you didn't learn a lesson.
I take my food takes incredibly serious. Like, I want, my job, like, politics, I don't weigh in. Like, right. That's not my gig. But, like, food takes are free range, and I will go the hell in on food takes.
And it was funny because, yeah, one of our city councilmen was trying to solicit you to be a food critic for him.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, like, and I told him, like, I mean, because, like, he smoked the chicken perfectly, but it needed some seasoning. Like, it needed some seasoning. Like, it was perfectly cooked. Skin was nice texture, you know, but, yeah, it's like I could tell you in the season of meat.
Yeah, that's a Dutchman. Because, yeah, that's when you were going home to your SpaghettiO casserole.
Yeah, SpaghaiiO hot dish. That's what we had.
First of all, we're in Iowa, so it's not a hot dish. It's a casserole.
It's a casserole.
No, it was just always called a hot dish.
No, it's a casserole.
No, a casserole goes in the oven. This is done on the stove.
Oh, my God. You don't even bake
that?
That's
not either one.
You don't bake that. It's all on the stove. Well,
no, it's traditionally cooked over a fire in a 55-gallon drum on the
How is this getting worse? Like, it sounded terrible, and now it keeps getting worse. Like, you don't even bake it at least? Like, oh my God.
No, there's no cheese over the top or something.
Why would you bake that?
Oh, my God.
I'll make some and invite you
over. No, I'm good.
Mongo hungry.
I'm good, man. If I do it, I'm writing a take five about it, and I'm like going, you're getting everything raw. Like, you're getting straight up like what I thought.
You should.
No, I'd be fine with that. Because I think you'll like it.
Okay, we're doing this. This is witnesses. This is happening.
Not only should you do a take five, you should also take Pepto-Bismol. Because I don't see this ending well.
No, it's really, really, really good.
You guys are going to see like a 2:30 a.m. tweet from me like, I'm in the bathroom.
I regret my decisions.
My stomach hurts. Like, I already got the tweet. The sacrifices I make for my readers.
Yeah, I think you're really going to enjoy it.
I mean, I'm going in with super low expectations, like the lowest expectations you can have. So I'm game, man. We got to do this. We got to do this. Like, this is, we're on. We're on.
So we've derailed. I think we were talking about Twitter.
Twitter.
Oh, yes. Twitter. Yes, the Twitter.
Well, hey, to circle back, though, so the point I wanted to make is the connections you get to make on Twitter with people that you otherwise never would. Oh, my God,
yes.
Because I have interests in sports and farming and politics and John Deere and all these things that are kind of unique to me. And I've found my way to all these people. Like, you look at my Twitter feed and it makes no sense at all.
Because but that's the
it's
best
just,
part.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah. And I've gotten to connect. Like, I've DM'd people from a guy at a John Deere dealer in North Dakota that I happen to follow that no way in the world we probably would have ever met before. Heck, I would venture to say you might not be in this room with us if it were not for Twitter. I mean, we all know each other, but we've interacted and gotten to know each other. Very well on Twitter, absolutely, more so than in person, right?
Yeah, because like it's harder to meet up and all that kind of stuff. But like right. Twitter's like you get a chance to like kind of get a sample of people's personalities and be like, damn, that dude seems kind of cool. I want to hang with him.
So let's take it a step back.
Yeah,
you don't have necessarily the opportunity for judgment by race, color, creed. It's all about the personality, like you said, and we just. And to be perfectly honest, we just started giving each other shit. And we've actually, I mean, over the years have become friends.
It's phenomenal.
Based on that.
Yeah, like, and it's great.
I love it, man. I love it so much. And it's like, and then it's like we all got our own little in-jokes, too, that other people are like, what is going on here? And so, like, because it was kind of funny. Like, a buddy of mine was complaining about on Twitter, like, about how their mayor, and when they live, it's another Northwest Iowa town. We cover them, to give you a hint, about how their mayor was complaining about their Facebook status and all that kind of stuff. And I was like, dang, man, I joke with my elected officials about cargo shorts.
And you went so far as to take it a step further, and now you are in a very gainful relationship with someone that you met on Twitter.
Yeah. I met my girlfriend through Twitter because I had a viral tweet talking about libraries because I'm a nerd.
And hey, we can't forget our favorite Twitter personality.
Shout out to Fake Bob again. Fake Bob, man. You're getting a shout out every episode, bro.
Well, we've mentioned his name before, but people who aren't on Twitter and not following him probably have no idea what we were talking about.
And they are missing out, man. His Twitter handle is @FakeBobVP.
Yeah, @FakeBobVP. So if you're not on Twitter, it doesn't take much to sign up for an account. If you follow somebody, that means they show up in your timeline. Mm-hmm. They'll know that you're there, but you don't have to speak to them. And just explain for a minute about you, Ty, how your Twitter status changed in the last week.
Well, I mean, I already had like 2,000 plus followers, but like
2,000.
Yeah, I was already at like 2,400.
I've got like 40.
And so, like after the last week,
your cows have internet.
Yo, 40 though, man, that's a good start.
Hey, thank you.
Like, remember? Remember he didn't even have a profile picture, and I was like, dude, you got to get a profile picture.
That's right.
Because like I try not to follow back people who don't have a profile picture because it's like, all right, man, that's kind of suspect. Like you can get a damn profile picture in 2020. Like if you don't have one, I don't trust it, man. And so, so like I gained like from the Sioux Falls protest to today, man, I gained like 1,000 followers or something like that, or close to it. It's been wild because like a lot of people, like you said, you know, you get that raw feed. And so a lot of people were getting that raw feed from Sioux Falls. A lot of them got that raw feed from Spencer. And then I had my speech on top of that. Yeah, so,
retweet.
Yeah. And then the front page. And so like my notifications have been like crazy. It's kind of weird getting, getting adjusted when you got the new followers because, you know, you're used to the people that you normally interact with and goof around with. Right. And so then when you have these new people hopping in the conversations, it's like, oh, dang, man, I can't keep up with this. Like I kind of had like a good balance because like I was able to like manage to keep up those conversations because I like to talk to people.
Let me ask you this. Do you feel
an obligation to be serious because people followed you for a serious reason?
Nah. Dude, I live tweeted a Roadhouse on Saturday. Not at all. And it's like, I mean, because like, all right, I see other journalists when they like live tweeted an event and they get a crap ton of new followers. They're like, oh, you know, expect these kind of tweets. I'm like, nah, you signed up for this, man. Because like my bio tells you everything you need to know about me.
Yeah.
But you know?
In the Roadhouse stuff, that's what I signed up for.
Yeah, right. Right. Yeah, man. And it's like, you know, it's
pain about it. Don't it's like, hurt. Yeah.
Yeah. I watched the game. It was so good. Like the ending was mad, but I loved everything else leading up to it. And it's just like, yeah, man, it's like you're gonna get a little bit of news, but you're also gonna get my hot takes on tacos and, you know, cargo shorts and all this other stuff. Like, and then like I'm gonna review beers for you, like, you know what I'm saying? Like all that stuff. You're gonna get all of that.
Actually, a quote from Roadhouse kind of encapsulates your Twitter mantra, which is it's be nice until it's time to not be nice.
Ooh, right? That's perfect. That is perfect.
Wow.
Damn, right? That's good. That is good. Yeah, because, like, I'm not, like, I'm into having fun on Twitter, man. Like, Twitter's, like, I have fun with people, and I like to joke around and, you know, goof off, man. It's, like, sometimes it's weird when people get, like, serious on one of my tweets. It's like, whoa, bro. Like, hey, take it easy, man. That's not me. Like, calm down. Like, why are you so angry?
All right, let's take a break here, because I want to talk about and to continue the education about how we can be better humans. And so we're going to do that right after this.
Just got the hang of it. So
yeah, see, I think that's too bad because I cut my own hair. Really? Why you can't cut your own? Yes, I always, the only thing I need help on is just keeping the back straight.
Well, that's exactly why what I need help
with. How good did you feel, Ty, when you finally got that haircut?
Dude, okay.
Because that shot of you on TV with like, I was worried about what was stuck inside of that afro because it was just like, okay. Dr. Huxtable over here.
Dude,
yeah, because it was so kind bad. Of in between afro. Like, it wasn't quite right. What you would call an afro.
It was it curls weird up. Stage it, like, in I can, between. I can curl it up, know? Though. And, yeah. But, dude, it was so bad. Like, okay, normally white people don't notice when I get my haircut, but they noticed.
Like, Ty, did you get a haircut? But someone like you, Ty, takes pride in their appearance, so you want to have a uniform appearance, so that way it always looks the same every time, right?
Oh, man. Well, because, like, I like to be fresh. You know me. Like, I like to be fresh. I like, you know, look good, all that kind of stuff. And so that was a rough 87 days. Like, and the fact that I know exactly how many days it was tells you.
So did you make it to your normal guy, or did
I went to my normal guy because he's actually just as, like, you know, paranoid about things as me. And so he's got, when you walk in, he's like, first thing he says is like, he's like, hand sanitizer. And I'm like, I whipped out my own, like, ha-ha.
You're got my some. Guy. You're
yeah,
my
I was
guy.
Like, hey. You know, I was like, I almost wanted to do a hand sanitizer cheers with him, but it was like, eh, we don't want to get our fingers that close. And he's wiping down the chair between clients and all that kind of stuff. And so, like, and I made sure to get the first haircut of the morning.
Oh, smart.
Good thinking.
Yep. So, like, it's always a pain for me because my guy's in Sioux City. So, like, I got to, like, plan half a day around it.
Sure. Yep. But you probably also stopped and got some nice beer.
No, dude. I was not playing around. Like, I got some Chick-fil-A because, like, I know Chick-fil-A has the, I love Chick-fil-A, man.
The Shout Lord's out to, I, chicken.
But, because I can order from the app, and then they bring it to your car, and they hold it out in a plastic tub, and then you grab it, and they already got gloves on and stuff like that.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, wow. Yeah. So, like, they got the contactless delivery and all that kind of stuff, too. So, like, but, yeah, like, for the fact that I just stopped to get beer tells you, I'm like, I'm not playing around.
Nice.
Like, yeah. Like, and it's like, I love to get beer. Like, that was like my, like, going to find new restaurants and beer was like, you know, my biggest weekend thing before, like, everything went up.
And that's us too. Yes.
Yeah. And it's like, oh man, like, my beer shelf is getting a little emptier. It's sad.
Wayne and I probably have a confession to make. We've traveled to two hot spots specifically to buy beer.
Yeah. We have made a couple Saturday afternoon pilgrimages.
Really? We were in and out very quickly.
Yeah. It was almost,
we sanitized.
It was sniper like.
No, it's like, and the thing is like, I like to peruse, man. I like to, like, look around and really contemplate, like, what I need.
Take the cans out of the cooler.
And, you know, I'm trying to see the APV. Right, and, like, yeah. I'm like, yeah.
Which brewery is this? Yeah. Have I had that?
right. Yeah. Like, I'll scan it in on my phone. Like, okay, where's this from? Ooh, no. Yeah, I want to get this. And it's like, I can't do that anymore, like, for a little bit. And it's just like, it sucks, man. I was like, that's like one of my favorite things to do.
Yeah. Well, we looked like we were robbing the place practically. We just ran in there with a cart and threw in whatever we could find and hustled back out.
Yeah, nah, because you, it's just like, it's so weird going grocery shopping these days because of everything going on.
And you have the people that follow it and the people that don't.
And the people that don't are like, where I'm like, okay, like, that's like where you're in, like, I'm not even an anxious person, but like, I'm like, you know, just because of like how some folks are in there. And it's like, oh, dude, calm down, relax, back up.
So you're the guy that follows the arrows in the aisles.
I still, like, I wear my mask, and I try to, like, I keep hand sanitizer in the car, so, like, I try to bring it with me, and then I try, like, to limit what I'm touching when I'm in the store as well, just because, like, you know, not because of, like, oh, I'm afraid of catching it from the touch, but, like, I don't want to know if I got something.
Yeah,
like,
you don't want to spread it.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Like, I want to be considerate of others as well, especially because, like, you know, we have an older population, man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
sure. And we just had our first death in our region confirmed today.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so that was something. I'm, like, surprised, like, I'm kind of surprised. Like, maybe I'll go look later, and somebody's going to be like, why is there still news? Because people got mad at us. Like, some people got mad at us.
Yeah, I saw
that. Yes. It's like, dude, you got a couple hundred kids on campus right now, like, it's
that's a thing. Yes, it is a thing.
And it's like dude, you know, you can just scroll past, like,
Yeah, I saw you had made that post too. As we record this, it's a little after 7 on June 9th, and so yeah, we had our first death,
like, in our 4-county region.
Yeah. And do you recall any of the details? Did they give an age range?
They did not. They just said it was a male.
Okay.
Like, I got some things, but I haven't verified them. Like, sure. I got some things in my head that I know and I'm from talking to people, but, like, it's not verified yet. So I don't, like, I try to,
Well, this is a podcast. It don't need to be.
No. I still have integrity, sir, man. Just, like, I hear something on the street doesn't mean, like, I report it, like, contrary to popular belief, until, like, I can verify this with multiple sources or talk to at least one confirmed source or something like that. Like, I don't just, like, put information out there. Like, I had some information about the situation we had at the park here in Sheldon a few weeks ago, and I could have definitely, like, said something that day, but, like, I wanted to talk to an official source on that before reporting, because, you know, it's the right thing to do in that kind of situation.
So what's the process on the stories that you make up, though?
Oh, man, dude.
Fake news time. What about your fake news?
Oh, God. If I wrote fake news.
I'm glad I'm sitting about 6 feet away from you. I think you may have hit me.
Like, if I wrote actual fake news, you remember when I saw you this morning?
Yep.
I would have saw you again in, like, an hour. Like, my job would be so easier. Like, it would be so easy if I just, like, made shit up. Like, it would be no work, no phone calls. And then it's like, people don't understand. Like, when people send us tips, like, we investigate those tips. And sometimes they turn out to be nothing. And so you don't report nothing. So, like, it's so much stuff that you put effort and energy into that people don't see behind the scenes. Like, sometimes you spend, like, 2 hours on a paragraph because you're trying to get some verification on just a simple, stupid little throwaway fact that you want to include in the story.
And that's what makes it a full-time job, because you have to be right. You have a duty, and it's a code to be right.
Yeah, no, it's exactly that. Like, it's a duty, it's a code. Like, I take pride in this stuff, man. Like, I didn't get in this to make up shit. Like,
right.
Nobody does. Like, you see I'm wearing my shirt, man. American Needs Journalists. And journalism takes support. Journalism takes work. It takes effort. It takes energy. It's stressful. And that's why, like, you know, I've been doing my little media swing, and, like, that's why I'm doing it too, just because it can help promote our products and help promote our publications.
How does that work when you're a journalist and a human being? And the reason why I bring this up, and I'll try to, you know, kind of bring this all back together. Let's go back to Twitter.
Yeah.
When you're a journalist, but also you have something that affects you as a person. How do those two beings coexist?
Oh, that's a good point. Like, and that's why, like, okay, for me, I don't see, you know, speaking up and speaking out on racial issues as me violating my journalism ethics. Like, what bias is there, dude? Like, at the end of the day, I'm a black man. Like, if I quit this job right now, I'm still a black man.
Right
now, I'm a black journalist. But if I quit this, I'm a black man in America. So that's going to be happening no matter what. That's going to be happening 24/7. That's been happening my entire life. So, like, I have a duty and I have a responsibility. I feel obliged to speak up. Like, I got a pretty good platform, and I'm not afraid to use it. Like, you got John Boyega out there. You know, he's got Star Wars money, but, like, he could lose, you know, all kind of stuff for speaking out and speaking up on these issues, because it's happened before. People like to silence black voices that speak out on these kind of issues. And he's putting himself out there. So, like, it'd be crazy for me to be like, oh, man, I got to, you know, like, to speak, you know, to speak out on these things, like, and not do it. Like, it's just stupid, man. Like, in 2014, like, I wanted to go to Ferguson so bad. Like, I wanted to go there, but, like, I was in Newton, and it was just too far, and I didn't have a local enough connection where it's like, you know, Sioux Falls, it's 1 hour, 15 minutes. It's a big event happening there. I didn't know it was going to be as big as it was, but I was like, okay, I can write this as a column, talk about it for my readers, get a bunch of photos, that kind of thing. Spencer, I was an active participant in that. Sheldon, these kids reached out to me and said, hey, we want to do this kind of thing in Sheldon. And I helped them out with that. And then it's like, okay, they asked me to speak. My girlfriend's coming to town. I haven't seen her since like sometime in March because... like, basically, right when things were starting to pop off here. And I asked her, I was like, hey, they want me to speak. You know, you're coming to town. I don't know. Do you want to go to a protest? And she's like, I want to see you speak. And I was like, damn. Yeah. Really? Damn. And,
all right. So to back up, as we make this podcast, it is June 9. It has just been announced that there will be a Sheldon protest in support of Black Lives Matter that will be happening. I believe it is from City Park. Rather the city parking lot,
the Sheldon Community Services Center parking lot.
Thank you. You know that well.
Yep, from there to the 4th Avenue to Sheldon City Park.
Yep,
because we're creative.
If you haven't noticed, Ty has taken umbrage with Sheldon's naming conventions for quite some time.
Because, like, it's stupid. Like, these are the official names. And so, as, like, if you know, we're, like, the official record keeper, so we have to keep track of this stuff. And then it's like, oh, we're just going to call it the pool, or we're just going to call it City Hall. And it's like, but you gave it this stupid, ridiculous name that I have to abide by, and then you're not going to even use it. And Mitch knows.
Yep, the Mitch, LLRC Mitch. At NWICC.
That's not even it. The Northwest Iowa Lifelong Learning and Recreation Center on the campus of Northwest Iowa Community College in Sheldon.
Hoofty.
That your wife runs, so you should probably get that right.
She fault. Didn't name it.
It's but your
you,
fault.
But you named Crossroads Pavilion.
Yeah, so
well, kind of. Yeah,
but that's like one of our best names.
Oh, hey!
Oh,
look at that!
So, yeah,
so,
I did. I
so
did
the
that.
Kind of part went to the other guy. You just happened to be.
I was trying also to be modest. Ran. I was trying to be modest.
Oh, gotcha. Sure.
But now that I'm not feeling that modest, so I'll take credit.
So, your girlfriend's actually going to be in the cul-de-sac.
Yep. She's going to be in the cul-de-sac, man. So,
I hope that we get the opportunity to meet her.
I got to bring her back. I think Ava would love her.
Oh yeah.
I want to show Okoboji, then, you know, get back in town in time. You know, I don't know if I'm going to write a new speech or repeat my old one or what, but, like, I mean, when these kids, like, the kid putting this on is, like, 17 years old, man.
Right.
So when he asked me to speak, like, it's just like, dude, okay. Because, like, it's not a temporary thing, man. Like, we can't just, like, oh, this is the movement right now. Let's talk out. Let's speak up. Let's talk about these issues. And, like, I've always talked about race in my, like, in my columns and things like that. And so it's like, I can't, like, have an event like this in my backyard, in the town I live in, the community that I love and that I feel like, for the most part, loves me, and not be a part of it and not speak out and not help support these kids. Like, these kids are putting themselves out there. You already saw some of the comments we got on the Facebook page just promoting the event. And so it's like, I can't let them do this alone. Like, I just can't. Like, that wouldn't sit right with me. Like, I know I haven't seen my girl in forever, and I love that. I love her so much, and, like, I'm ready to spend some quality time with her, but, like, I just can't. Like, I can't just sit there on my hands while these kids are putting themselves out there. You know, when you got dudes already threatening to come out there with guns just in case something happens. Like, I can't let a 17-year-old face that fight alone when I'm a 33-year-old grown-ass man.
Right. Well, we hope that we look forward to seeing how that goes and listening into how you cover that and how you're able to help enhance that situation. And we'll have the bonfire going. Maybe you and the missus can stop by.
There we go. Yeah.
Yeah, and thanks for speaking out, Ty. I was glad that your speech that you gave in Spencer was made available over, I think I saw it on Facebook or Twitter.
It's on YouTube, but I've shared the link on Facebook and Twitter.
So I saw it there. That was really beneficial for me to listen to and to learn from. And,
And it was, you know what, it was raw and it was real.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been friends, and we've been friends for years, but that's something that I could tell that was so raw and so just it so meaningful. And the fact that you were able to share that with an entire area full of strangers was very, very cool. It was heartwarming for me to see, like, that you could, that it was something that meant so much that you were able to, I'm guessing you were maybe just a scotch nervous.
Nah.
Really?
Good dude, to go? Think about how much public speaking I do, man.
Right, but to present something that's so raw and so close to you.
Nah.
Really?
Not at
good
all,
good
to bro.
Go. Good for you.
Like, I mean, just think about how much public speaking I do. Like, you know. Well, I mean, dude, I hosted the Jasper County Fair Queen pageant in 2014, bro.
Ty does some name dropping here.
You know, just putting that out there. So, but no, I mean, obviously, I knew it was going to be like, you know, a different speech because usually when I do my talks, I'm talking about journalism, just giving a little history on me and all right. that sort of thing. And so, but this was different. Like, it was obviously a lot different than a lot of the other speeches I've given in my life. But I've always been a public speaker. Like, you know, I gave speeches in front of my entire school multiple times growing up. Like, you know, when it was time for when it was Martin Luther King Day, you know, you always had the one kid who gave the I don't know how it was up here, but like in Kansas City, we always had the one kid who gave the Have a Dream speech, and a lot of times I was that kid. I think like one of my first speeches was in fourth grade when I was running for vice president of the city council when I gave a speech in front of the entire school. I lost that election.
Aaron's just crapping his pants thinking about having to do that in fourth grade. Yeah. Or even today.
Oh, I remember like when they announced it over the intercom at the end of the day, and like I started crying on my desk.
Oh no.
Oh man, yeah, because like I lost to like a super popular fifth grader because like I actually spoke about the issues of the city council, you know what I'm saying? I mean, not the city council, but the student council, yeah. And then I lost, and oh man, I was upset. But then they put me on the council anyway, just like not in a, you know, I wasn't like president, treasurer, or vice president, or anything like that. I was just like a member, so I was like, all right, cool, I'm still on there. But
that's good,
yeah.
Well, I got to say your speech that we were talking about. One thing that was great about it was having somebody local at a local event speak. It hit home more for me. Not that I didn't care about these issues anyway, but to have somebody I know share an experience that I didn't know about all those things, obviously,
right?
And to hear that, I hope it drove it home with some other people who know you.
I think
as
it
well.
Did. I think it did for a lot of people because so many people were like, "Oh my god!" Like I didn't realize like it was like that. And I think just because so many people have gotten to know me through the years, and like they're just like, "Dang." I didn't realize it was like that.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
And you know, Ty, I'll admit this. I was the guy that would say, "Yeah, Ty, all lives matter." In response to Black Lives Matter, and just the education that's been available through Twitter, Facebook, you listening to your speech, certainly been educational for me, and I've appreciated it.
Nah, man, I'm glad to hear that because like that's what I try to do. Like, because my column that ran in the last week's Mail Sun, I wrote about covering the Sioux Falls protest, and I explained Black Lives Matter, and I actually had it way lower in the story, but I was like, you know what? I know my audience. I need to move that up higher to explain, like, hey, we're not saying that other lives don't matter. We're saying, dude, like, Black Lives Matter too. Like, hey, just, you know, could you stop killing us? Could you stop profiling us? Could you, you know, give us that fair shake in life? Because a lot of people, you know, got that bootstraps mentality, and there's nothing wrong with that. But you got to realize, like, it's not the same opportunities for everyone, you know?
Yeah. Well, and going back to the Twitter thing, I think it's been really eye-opening, you know, like, well, the Iowa Hawkeye football team, they lifted the Twitter ban, and now you're seeing some stories shared there. I don't know if you guys saw today, Torrey Hunter. I never knew he had a clause in his contract that he could not be traded to the Boston Red Sox because every time they played in Boston, he got called the N-word and said, I will never play there. He had that clause in his contract
the way throughout
Boston's
his career.
Racist as hell.
Well, and you know, I've always heard that, but to hear, I mean, that's a guy that I admire. And he was a great ball player for the Twins, so we followed him, you know, through his whole career. And then to see that, like, you know, I'm not a black guy, so I haven't experienced that. I haven't even noticed that level of racism that overtly anyway. And that, man, that's eye opening to see somebody who, you know, most people look up to was being treated like that publicly. It was shocking. Yeah. Really, so.
No, and there's like all kind of stories like that from these, you know, professional athletes, celebrities, and all that kind of thing. And then it's like, so think about that. It's happening to these guys with that kind of platform, with that kind of success, with those kind of resources. So imagine average Joe black guy like me, like that shit's happening.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
What does progress look like? What does change look like? Is there, I mean, there's no roadmap. Obviously you're trying to promote change.
Yeah.
Well,
I think like what we're doing right here today, like having those conversations, being open about it, like being understanding and learning that, you know, it's not the same template in life for everybody is a good step to that, because a lot of people don't want to have those conversations or they have their head in the sand about it. Like, you know, which is a huge thing in our corner of the state. Like,
yes,
I love these people around here and I love this place, but like there's definitely a lot of times where people are just like, nope, I don't want to know about it, or don't see no evil, hear no evil, you know, don't speak no evil. And it's like, nah, dude, you got to be aware of the stuff that's happening like to other people and to
to get that other perspective and like to, I mean, like I hear a lot of people preach empathy, but you got to really show it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like a lot of people try to say like, oh, why color isn't a thing or something like that. And it's like, dude, you made color a thing. Like, yes, you made it a thing. And now we're speaking out about it being a thing and all that kind of thing. And so you gotta take ownership of that. And you got to be willing to help us out. And you got to be willing to, you know, correct your friends when they make a joke at the bar and things like that. Like, you got to be willing to, man. Like, we can't do this alone. Nothing will change if we don't have help.
Yeah, and it's unfortunate that we don't, that we're having to have this conversation, that we don't know what the finish line is. And it's more so unfortunate that it took the death of a innocent man at the hands of a police officer to have us have this conversation. But for as fun as it is to talk to you, I'm ready to have this conversation every day of the week.
As you should be, man. It's got to happen. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, nothing's going to change, you know? Like, I mean, the one guy, you saw the Facebook comments. He's like, what? This is still going on? And it's right. Like, nah, bro. Yeah, this is going on every single day. Like, you got to get this message as well. Like, and you got to understand this.
I had posted something on my Facebook page about the Defund the Police movement. Just not that I was advocating for it, but that I...
the question.
Yeah, I posed the question, like... So this is what I found on a Des Moines area's Twitter feed about this is what the advocates for defunding the police look like. I got more like personal messages, calls, texts, emails. People were pissed. And it's like, okay, I'm not openly advocating for defunding the police department in Sheldon, Iowa. What I am advocating for, because I am from Minneapolis... So half of my friends are from Minneapolis and very close to the situation that happened up there, and the other half are from here. And so I thought, what a great experiment to have them come together in a very non-confrontational way, but like in an open arena where there's no bias. I did not want to present a bias like, oh, it's so stupid that they're thinking that they're going to do this, or, hey, yeah, as a city councilman, I think, yeah, let's defund the police. Now, I wanted to come and say, like, hey, this is the conversation that's happening. What say you? And I was able to get some good commentary on that, but boy, did I get lit up behind the scenes.
Well, in like every issue, people immediately jump to one side or the other, and they hear defund the police. You're going to completely disband police departments across the entire United States and totally defund them. I don't think the people that are serious about it, about making a change, that's not what they're saying. They're saying reduce funding for the, you know, the more militaristic aspects of the police and try to be more community policing minded, which I can totally understand that. You know, I mean, I've seen people point out that, well, we can't make enough masks and ventilators, but we got plenty of tear gas and rubber bullets laying around. And it, you know, that's a valid point. And I'm not against police at all. And I think the entire trying to dismantle police departments is stupid, but there's a point to be made there that there could be some reforms and maybe reallocation of resources. And I don't think that's offensive to police or saying that we don't need police. That's just looking at the problems we have and trying to find a solution. So
there's a conservative journalist in Iowa, Shane Vanderhart, who runs a blog called Caffeinated Thoughts, and he actually wrote a really good piece just to talking about like police reform and like some suggestions they could do here in Iowa. And I was like, and it wasn't like defund the police, like he was just saying like, hey, here's some suggestions or some ideas you can do to improve community policing. And I was just like, dang, these are like pretty solid, you know. Like, it, like I said, it wasn't like, oh, defund the police, because that's, yeah, I mean, that's like when you hear it on the surface level, you're like, oh my god, whoa buddy, calm down. you're too excited there. And so like I just thought he had a lot of good ideas on that. And then I think one thing that's kind of helped me out is that being a journalist, I've gotten a chance to know a lot of the officers in our area and just like communicate with them and relate to them. Because like, all right, Mike Anderson, former O'Brien County Sheriff, served, I believe, 42 years, longest tenured sheriff in Iowa. And he told me he drew his service weapon 3 times in his career.
Wow.
Right. Which, when you think about it nowadays, you're like, only 3 times in 42 years, the most tenured sheriff in Iowa. And like, even though we're a smaller community, like in O'Brien County, he still sees some crap. Like, just look at all the stuff we've seen in the last few years. And so when he told me 3 times, and you know what he told me that the secret was? Communication. Lyle Bokum, a former Sheldon police chief, told me the same thing. And like many officers I talk to around here, they say that they say the exact same word, communication. And I think like we got the benefit in this area of like getting to know our officers. We get to know the people who are there to protect and serve us. And so like it gives you an entirely different feeling versus when you're in a bigger area and it's like you don't know the officer from Joe Blow and he doesn't know you from Joe Blow. And you get a lot of those situations where like things escalate and you know go bad. badly. Whereas like here, man, like, you know, people like know the officers by their last name or something like that. Like they know them. Like when you see them in the store, when you see them at the events, right. You know them.
Yeah. In most cases, you either go to school with them or their kids or church or anything like that. So there's that local accountability. Whereas you don't have that in a Minneapolis where they're bringing in police from other towns and things like that. And as you recall, there was the it was raised on the city council agenda about expanding the scope upon which we can draw police applicants from.
Right. I mean, as a reporter, like I'm like, oh, okay. I mean, like not as a reporter, like as a citizen, I kind of raised my eyebrows because it's like, you know, I think one of the benefits the Sheldon Police Department has is that we know our officers, like,
right.
And that, you know, and then like I think for taxpayers as well, like you want the guy to put in that money right back into the community that they are supposed to protect and represent. So like if for me it'd be kind of as a taxpayer it'd be kind of like, wait, so you want this dude to live in Orange City but we're gonna pay him Sheldon dollars?
Right
Yep.
But the problem is, and Aaron, you know this from back in the days when we used to have a lot of time with the trooper, now Sergeant Kurtz, especially in this society, the number of people that want to be law enforcement officers have diminished. So now those qualified candidates are so few and far between that you're having to make concessions that you would not normally make in order just to have a police service. And that's a problem.
No, it is. I mean, I had a buddy in high school who kind of got picked on, and he wanted to become a cop. Thankfully, he didn't, just to get revenge on me.
Oh, man.
And I've heard similar stories from, like, educators in our area of, like, they've had students who want to become a cop one day just so they can kind of, like, pay back those people who mistreated them in high school. And it's like, dude, that's the wrong motivation, man. Like, when I talk to a guy like Lyle Bokomo, who put 30 years on the shield, you know, he tells me, like, I wanted to just, like, you know, he didn't become a cop naturally. Like, he did some other things, and then he was like, you know, he decided to come around to protect his community. We talked to a guy like Jet Corver, you know,
Jet's a great police officer, example.
Became a deputy. He wanted to protect his community. Like, he's wanted to be a cop since he was little. His mom will tell you that. And so when you hear those kind of stories, those are the guys that you're like, yes, they should be protecting your community, serving your community. Whereas like you talking about like the bottom of the barrel guys who were just like, you know, they saw something wrong with them, but they need a body. And that's like, that's scary.
That is exactly what we need to protect against. However, it's going to be something more than we can solve here on this little podcast, but the quote, hashtag defund the police movement has some merits in so much as concentrating on mental health issues and things like that, but that will not, none of that will stop a violent predator. And it's unfortunate, but there are those amongst us that will be a violent predator, and there's going to be something that needs to happen here.
There's a lot going on, man, and it's like you said, it's like a weighty issue. And it's so complex.
I waited till we were like several beers in to really bring this up, like right at the end of the podcast.
Well, that's what I told you this morning, Tom.
Oh yeah,
don't get there so late that this thing goes off the rails.
I don't know. No, and that's just it. I mean, like it sucks because it is so weighty. It's so deep, and it affects us all. And I think if anyone was going to glean anything from this, it's just understand how much what you say, what you think, and what you do affects others.
That's a good point.
I think if we start there, that's where change can happen. And sometimes it takes a conversation in a room of friends over beer, and sometimes it takes people taking to the streets. I think either way, as long as we all get to the same conclusion that we're all in this together, and no man, woman, or child should be treated any different than any other, I think we'll be okay. Normally, I have like at least an outline of how the show is going to go. I had an idea before all of this hit, and then after that, I was just like, you know what? Screw it. We're all friends here. Let's just talk.
Yeah, let's wing it.
Yeah.
I know, because like, I tell people all the time, like, they're like, do you prepare for interviews? I'm like, no.
Right. And that's, nobody wants to hear a canned speech.
Yeah.
They want to hear something genuine, which is why your speech, the speech that you made in Spencer was so, it was so touching, because you could tell it was from the heart. It wasn't something that was just like, well, you know, something that I've heard other people deal with is such and such. As a reporter, I feel like, blah. No, you said, as this is me, this is the fight that I have, and this is it's a something that we don't deal with.
Yeah, I mean, I had a lot of people who were like, even though I'm here today and I'm standing with them, they're just like, they got nervous, like hearing that part about like my encounter with the police, like, oh my God, like what's going to happen next? Even though, like I said, I'm right here and I'm delivering this speech to them. They were still like, geez, like, where's this going to go?
I'm really glad you came on, Ty. Yeah, because, well, like you brought up, well, I grew up in a house where, and I'm so thankful for that. My mom and dad didn't talk that way. They don't talk that way. And
they don't even think that way.
Yeah. And then when I see these things, I'm in denial. No. That's just a very small slice because this is my experience. So I will say the last 10 days or whatever it's been has been extremely enlightening for me. And I think a lot of people like me who grew up like me in this area who haven't seen it and don't want to face that could be a possibility or a reality are now learning it is a reality for people. It's really an awakening, and it has been quite a learning opportunity. So, again, appreciate you coming on, Ty.
Oh, yeah, man, no problem.
Yeah, and,
man, you know, it's dangerous having you on, Ty. We could go for a 4-hour podcast.
And both our bladders and our wives are waiting. Are you bleeding?
I am.
What the heck, man?
I know. We got to shut this down. I need to tourniquet my arm.
What did you do?
I don't know.
Cut. Okay. So far in this podcast, we've had...
You know what you say after every podcast?
Huh. Boy, guys, I really talk too much. I really just talk too much on that podcast.
I just want to put a bow on it. That's all I'm trying to do is just put a bow on it.
You've put like 4 bows on this.
Yeah. I have. I thank Ty for being here. This is like
the
third
Lord of the Rings movie.
Aaron's the most thankful person in America.
I know. I thank
right
Ty
now.
For being here 7 times. Ty, I really
appreciate it. I appreciate you too. I'm just tired of saying it.
Yeah,
so,
no problem.
This podcast is brought to you by Super High Tech.
I didn't even do an open or close today.
But we did, you know, for the work you did to move us into the air conditioning, we owe it to you.
Yeah.
If you broke your phone, computer, if you need IT at your business, call Wayne's guys.
If you have Super smashed your device in frustration, is this podcast ever going to end? Call Wayne.
Super-HT.com. And more importantly, Ty, where can we find you on Twitter?
You can find me at Rush the Rider.
At Rush the Rider. And once I actually put this whole thing together, I might be smart enough to embed that link.
Hey, that'd be really neat.
Yeah,
there you would.
All right. I'm going to let you guys go home. We'll be back next week, the week thereafter, somewhere. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you again soon.
Just give me all the bacon and eggs you have. Wait. I worry what you just heard was, give me a lot of bacon and eggs. What I said was, give me all the bacon and eggs you have. Do you understand?